The date is December 23rd, 1999, and we're watching Galaxy Quest. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Alexander Dane to my Jason Nesbitt.
Hello, my name is Colin Nolan Stewart, Ewart.
Okay, then. So, this week we're looking back at December 1999 when the movies in theaters were Angela's Ashes, The Talented Mr. Ripley, Man on the Moon, Bicentennial Man. I'm going to give some bonuses because 1999 is awesome. Stuart Little, Magnolia, Any Given Sunday. And, of course, our movie for today, Galaxy Quest, which earned $90.7 million on a $45 million budget.
Wow, that's a lot of good movies.
Yeah, like if 1999 was a high school student, it would be the quarterback that is just crushing ass left and right, good looking. Like 99 has to be one of the ultimate years of movies. Like we've talked about this before with American Pie. 91 was also a good year. I think that was like Silence of the Lambs, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, stuff like that. We've watched a lot of 91 movies lately as well. But yeah, 99, it's where it's at.
Yeah, we've watched a lot of 89 movies lately as well, and not so good.
But we haven't gotten to the best of 89, like Batman, you know?
Yeah, so, we're watching the dregs of 1989. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, I have several. Now, I have a feeling they must have had, like, separate character posters or something for this movie. Okay, you'll see why. Because the first tagline is, are we there yet? The second is Pedal to the Metal Commander. The third is All Systems Functional Commander. Fourth is By Grabthar's Hammer by the Sons of Warben, You Shall Be Avenged. And fifth is Never Give Up, Never Surrender. So each one of those said by separate characters in this movie. That I just feel like you would have had like this one big poster of Sigourney Weaver, and it would say All Systems Are Functional Commander. Like banners hanging, you know, like the big banners that are in the movie theaters.
But do you think Galaxy was it that big of a movie to have had individualized banners?
They might have tried. Like, I mean, looking at the actual box office take, it wasn't as big as I think this movie deserves to be, but we'll get to that. Yeah, no, but that is the thing, is I think it would have been a movie that they tried to market because it was DreamWorks. Mm-hmm. And this would have been when DreamWorks was still young. So they would have been like riding that wave, mm-hmm, and been like, no, we got to get some of our money back on this one.
I'm wondering, like, I know of how people think about Galaxy Quest after the fact, but I don't recall what the hype or anticipation for Galaxy Quest was like. Mm-hmm. At the time it was coming out, do you remember anything about it?
I don't, no. Okay. No, that's, yeah. So I do have two more taglines here. Next one, a comedy of galactic proportions. So there's our puns. No more of this quoting the movie bullshit. No, now we've got our puns.
I'm a little surprised that they didn't have something, just a tagline with the phrase, they boldly go.
Yeah.
Just to really lay into the Star Wars or Star. Oh my gosh, delete that from
faux pas.
Delete that when you edit this podcast. The Star Trek parody,
or even just they boldly went.
Or they boldly,
you know,
went.
Like something that, yeah, that something cheeky like that, yeah. But finally, the last one, the show was canceled, but the adventure has only begun.
I like it. It lets you know what you're getting into.
That's the one. Yeah. But it may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
Okay. A group of has-been actors from the hit 1980s show Galaxy Quest finds themselves relegated to doing autograph signings at fan conventions and other minor promotional appearances. As the frustrations with their current station in life causes tensions to run high and their relationships with each other to crumble, their captain, Jason Nesmith, fights to keep the band together so that he can continue to live off his former glory and the adoration of nerds across the globe. One day, while at a con, Nesmith is approached by what he perceives to be a group of overzealous fans who want him to appear in their homemade movie, but in fact they're a group of aliens called Thermians, who believe that the Galaxy Quest TV show is a historical document and have come to ask Jason to become their new commander in their fight against the evil warlord Saurus, who wants to know the secret behind a weapon called the Omega 13. Not realizing what he's agreed to, Jason goes with the Thermians, and while he sleeps off a hangover, they transport him to their ship. Whereupon waking, he confronts Saurus and, thinking it's all fake, directs the Thermians to fire on him. A job well done, Jason gets teleported back to Earth and realizes it was all real. When Saurus counterattacks the Thermians, they come running back to Jason, and this time he and the entire crew join the Thermians on a real-life replica of their TV ship, the Protector. Now the actors must literally fake it till they make it in space. Growing in character and in their characters, they must work together to figure out what the Omega 13 is, stop Saurus, and save the Thermians. Will they do it? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny that before your synopsis, you mentioned the fact that this is one that people found later. Because I was definitely one of those people that I found this on video, not in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I saw this in theaters.
Interesting.
But it is one that as soon as I did see it, I fell in love with it. I mean, it's everything you want a Star Trek movie to be. And it's not Star Trek, but I have read that like this is said to be like J.J. Abrams' inspiration for the new Star Trek reboot movies.
Oh, interesting.
You know, he's like, no, I want to do what Galaxy Quest did, but with Star Trek. So, you know, I appreciated it for what it was. It was funny Star Trek, and obviously someone like J.J. Abrams also felt that way when he, you know, made his movies. Now, what about you, Colin? Like, I don't have a huge history with Galaxy Quest, but I love it. What's your history with Galaxy Quest?
This is the first watch for me, to be honest.
Right on.
It's one of those movies that, you know, being a nerd and going to Comic Cons and stuff, like, I've always known people really love it.
Yeah.
Heard lots of good things about it, but I must admit, like, I'm not a star guy. Like, I'm not a space guy. Like, I'm more of a...
You would prefer, like, a Dragon Con over...
Yeah, I like magic, you know, and dragons and knights and, like, fantasy, that type of stuff. I'm not a...
Trek Con.
Not really big into science fiction. I'm slowly getting into it a little bit more, but I've never been, like, a big Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like it. Like, I've watched the J.J. Abrams movies, and I think they're fine, but it just doesn't draw me like superheroes or fantasy does.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, it's kind of always been a movie that I've thought, oh, it'd be cool to watch, but I've just never really gotten around to it, and now I have, and, yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's jump into Galaxy Quest, directed by Dean Parisot, who was the director on Red 2 and Bill and Ted Face the Music, produced by Mark Johnson, who is like a big time producer when it comes to like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, Charles Neuwirth, who has been part of the MCU lately. See, and I'm just kind of throwing out all these credits because it's like, you know, these are guys that have gone on to do big, huge things. And it's like, you can tell that they pick good projects if this is also one of the ones that they do. And it's written by David Howard, who has a total of 2 credits, this movie and a movie called Trek the Movie. I don't know if it's like a documentary on Star Trek. And also written by Robert Gordon, who has 7 total credits. Men in Black 2 is one of them. And so, yeah, we open this movie on the original television show. This is one where I wish I had seen this in theaters because of this scene. Because it starts off, and like in theaters, it would have expanded in a way that was very cool looking. Like that's something that I read about this movie, because it starts off with like the 4:3 ratio or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's not as impressive when you watch it on the TV screen. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I like the way it opens. I kind of wanted a bit more. I almost wanted a little bit more of the TV show. I would have liked to.
Yeah.
And I think like what they don't really explain well until like later on was like that's the last episode. Like it ends on this like cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But they don't really say like whether or not it got canceled or not, or like what the circumstances were around the series ending. They just kind of say later on, I think when they're talking about the historical documents, that they just mentioned like that was their last episode. So that's why nobody really knows what the Omega 13 is.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's so frustrating because, like, My Name is Earl is a show that has done same thing. Yeah. It ended its fourth season on a cliffhanger, and it's like, come on, # My Name is Earl movie.
Yeah.
You know, just one, I don't even need a reboot of the series. I just need, like, yeah, a Netflix movie, My Name is Earl.
No, I agree. I love that show. It's one of those ones. I hate that so much, like, to the point where there's so many good shows that I won't watch because I know they end after one season. And currently, mm-hmm. the thing that, like, pisses me off so much about Netflix is, like, there's so many shows that they put out, and I watch, and I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be, like, a 6-season show, and then, no, they cancel it after one season, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
But, yeah.
And then bring back the weirdest shit. Like that fucking My Name is Cat sitcom. I know this isn't Netflix, but that's coming back. Call Me Cat or whatever it is. The one that has Maya Bialik in it.
I don't know.
I watched a few episodes of the first season. It's terrible. That was her post-Big Bang Theory job.
Mm.
So I love in the opening that you get to see Child Tommy.
Yeah.
What I find funny, and Tommy, like grown-up Tommy, an alternate casting was David Alan Greer. But Daryl Mitchell, who does play Tommy, is actually 3 years older than Sam Rockwell, who plays Guy. But in the original series, he was a kid. Tommy was a kid, and Guy was an adult still.
Oh, yeah.
And I found that little fun fact pretty hilarious.
Yeah. I love, like, just in this opening, how well they set the relationships between everybody.
Yeah.
You have Alan Rickman as, what's his name? Faint Dane?
That's Alexander Dane, yeah.
Alexander Dane. And it's just like, you know, he's like exactly like what you'd expect. Like I love that they have the guy who's like the staunch, I am an actor, and like, but he's been relegated to this, you know, you could just imagine, like, he probably went on this series and thought, like, oh, it was just a job and he would have many more. But then as is typical of those shows at this time, so many of those actors just got stuck in these characters forever and could not do anything else. And so I like that you have that guy. Sigourney Weaver to me is just, I couldn't believe that was her.
Yeah.
The blonde wig and everything, and like having her boobs puffed out and stuff. It's like, it's just so not the, like, it's so not the Sigourney Weaver I've seen in, like, Alien and stuff. And
yeah, it's Bombshell Sigourney Weaver is what she's got going on, yeah.
And so, yeah.
She's Zool.
Yeah. Yeah, Zool. And I just like how they the level of frustration that they have with the fact that they're at this convention and, like, this is what their lives have become, and how weirdly, like, Jason is still their captain in like, their own lives. Somehow, their whole thing still, because he was the main guy, still has to revolve around him, and their disdain for him for that.
The fictional dynamic is also their real dynamic, in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I will say on this viewing that my appreciation for Tony Shalhoub just skyrocketed.
Yeah.
You know, I've always liked the character of Fred Kwan, but on this viewing, it's kind of like, all of a sudden, like, I got the joke.
Yeah.
right? The fact that it's like, you know, it's calling back to a time when any actor that looked reasonably ethnic was put into, you know, like he's Helmsman Chen or Engineer Chen or whatever.
Yeah.
And his, you know, his stage name is Fred Kwan. You know, I like the satire that they've got going on that I've never really clued in on until this viewing. But I was so in love with that character as well. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just so chill.
Yeah.
With absolutely everything going on. My favorite, I mean, and it's a line that's always stuck with me, you know, and it's one that I use regularly is, that's a hell of a thing. You know, like, it's just so much joy where it's just like, that's a hell of a thing. Yeah. And he just walks off. Everyone else is still like suffering from like transport sickness.
Yeah, I love that he's the guy who like who weirdly like he, I think
just rolls with it.
I think he enjoys this situation as much as Jason Naismith does, except that he doesn't have he was never the guy who was like had all the adoration, but yeah, he's just happy to be a part of it. You know, so he's just like, yeah, I'll show up. I'm not doing anything else. And whereas the other main, like, Dane and Sigourney Weaver's character, like, it's like they, I feel like, kind of wanted more, but didn't get it.
Well, it's almost like with your comment of, you know, everyone sitting around being like, ugh, this is my life now. With him, it's like, this is my life now.
Yeah.
Like, I just gotta show up. Like, he just, yeah, he's just walking around like, you know, like Permafry or, you know, like, it's just, I really appreciated him. Now, so we open this movie with them, like, after we see the television thing. And I agree with you, by the way, that I think that, you know, it would be nice to see a bit more of the TV show. It would be, like, the fact that they reference all these TV shows with the chompers or, you know, whatever various objects that they have to get beyond. Mm-hmm. It's like, it would be nice to see more footage from those things that they are referencing.
Yeah.
But like once they're actually at the convention. Now, this is where I have a very shameful confession. I'm a nerdy guy. I've never been to a con.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Yeah, I've never been to an expo. I've never been to, like, any of these gatherings of any kind of nerdy types. Any of my people. I will go to one day. I never have. But are the people on the panels wearing costumes a normal thing at conventions? Or is it just the people milling about the floor? I find it weird that they are in their full Starfleet get up.
I've been to quite a few. I've never seen anybody dressed in costume for a panel.
Okay.
Unless they're a cosplayer. But
yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's probably the only. I mean, funny story, kind of like an anecdote, I guess. The very first con I ever endeavored to go to was the Calgary Expo that was, I think it was the 25th anniversary of Star Trek The Next Generation. And
okay.
And the entire cast was there, like every one of the main people was there.
Wow.
I thought I could just drive, like I didn't take that into consideration. I thought, you know, it's a comic convention. At this time it's still, you know, I'm used to a world where like being a nerd is not cool, so I didn't expect that I needed to get tickets into advance.
Yeah.
And I got there, and the lineup for tickets was literally around the BMO Center in Calgary. And me and my buddy, we waited, and we're like, we're never going to get in. Like, it was just, yeah. it was completely sold out. So we had driven all the way there, didn't actually get to go to it. And then, so, like, from that point on, I've always bought my tickets in advance if I'm going.
Yep. Yeah, see, I bought Chris Expo tickets 1 year. But, yeah, I've never gone myself. I guess I work a lot of weekends. That's part of my problem.
Yeah, that's fair.
So
I'd got this movie out from the library, and so I watched the special features. Apparently, they filmed this part at an actual Star Trek convention. That was going on.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I have read that. I mean, a lot of the things that happen in this movie are kind of veiled references to real life events.
Mm-hmm.
Even the whole crux of Jason going into his tailspin because he overhears in the bathroom, you know, some people bad mouthing him. I read that that's something that actually happened to William Shatner. Okay. At a convention in the 80s. Or there's questions about how Gwen DeMarco fits into her outfit and things like that. And, you know, that's something that I guess has legitimately been asked of people like Jeri Ryan and Anne Hathaway and Scarlett Johansson. Like, they're all actually, like, pointing out these things that are real problems and... Huh. Yeah, I found that interesting. And so, like, when you were even talking about Alan Rickman's character earlier, I know that's one of the ways that Patrick Stewart felt when he first started with Star Trek.
Yeah.
They're obviously trying to make some sort of homages to real-life science fiction people.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that this movie does really well is it's not simply a parody of Star yeah. Trek. It's like it toes that line of it's more like satire and homage than it is like where it's like I thought it was like just straight up parody, but when yeah. I watched it I was like they're never really like poking fun.
No, it's a love letter yeah. to the genre. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's sending it up but at the same time it's different enough to be its own thing.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you ever watched the Orville, the Seth MacFarlane show. I mean, it's the same sort of thing where it's like you can tell that there is a love for the things that have come before it, but it is also, in a way, you know, a bit of a satire for the genre, you know, so.
Yeah, I was very pleased when the Thermians come to see a young Dwight K. Schrute.
Yes.
The assistant to the assistant commander.
That's right.
Assistant to the commander.
Yeah, and one of the other Thermians is Sam Lloyd. I don't know if you watch Scrubs. He's Ted the lawyer.
Okay. I haven't yeah. watched Scrubs. I've seen a few episodes, but...
Sam Lloyd, the nephew of Christopher Lloyd. And, yeah, Sam Lloyd unfortunately passed away, like, last year or something like that, but... Yeah, very funny guy on Scrubs. I love him on Scrubs. But yes, it is fun to see some of these other people. Like what's his name? Enrico Colantoni? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Mathazar. It's easier to say Mathazar with him. But yeah, I mean, he's one of these guys that, like, I've seen him in 100 different things. There was this Canadian cop show that took place in Toronto.
Flashpoint,
great, that's great it show. yeah I couldn't remember the name of it, but yeah, I mean, I love this guy, but my god, his performance is as Mathazar, like all of them, like Rainn Wilson is a perfect person. This is his debut movie, by the way.
Yeah,
but he's the perfect person to be playing this alien for sure with what we know that Rainn Wilson can do. But like, yeah, Mathazar, just like that voice for one.
Funny, you know, enough, like I watching the special features again, they all said this, but the way that the aliens move and talk, that's all Enrico Colantoni's invention. Mm-hmm. Like when he did his audition, he did that voice, and I guess it's the voice, it's from like a vocal exercise where you hit like every resonance point at the same time.
Mm.
And so that's where that voice comes from. And there was even the woman who, Missy Pyle.
When
she did her audition, I guess they just showed her what he did. And it was basically like, if you can replicate this, then you get the role. And then, nice. And then the way they walk, it's like they were saying
arm and leg at the same time. It's right arm, right leg at the same time. And that would be tough to do. I've tried doing that.
Well, they were saying that all the aliens had to go to like alien school. And so, like, they had to practice every morning. They would practice that walk for like an hour to get into it, and then go do their scenes.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that would be tough. Oh, hi. I wrote down here the ship, by the way, its model number is NTE-3120, and NTE stands for not the Enterprise. So they are actually trying to distance themselves from Star Trek, nice. But still show some love. So this storyline, though, of the historical documents that the alien race thinks is real, this happens often, right? Like, off the top of my head, Pixels is a movie that uses this idea.
I haven't seen that movie, but I know I'm thinking of other ones like...
My stepmother is an alien.
I mean, isn't that kind of how, like, there's that one? But isn't that almost like how Independence Day starts? Isn't there something like... Or what movie am I thinking? I'm thinking of another movie where they're like playing music in space or something, and it like draws the aliens to attack.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, anyways, so, yeah, it is a pretty common thing.
Yeah.
It kind of made me wonder, though, like, why is it only that show? Like,
yeah.
Are any other TV shows coming through, or like what is it? Why is it specifically just Galaxy Quest that's being transmitted out?
Yeah, it's for some reason that transmission is bouncing off a satellite wrong.
Yeah. Or is it just because they were looking for, maybe they were flipping through historical documents and found like one that was about a spaceship and a space commander, and so that's why, I don't know.
Yeah. Now the one thing I don't understand about this, though, is like going through the historical documents, they give them food based on where they're from. And they have somehow found the species of Alexander Dane's character, whatever his name was, I forget. By Gravthar's hammer, whatever. See, that's the thing. They've got so many names, I forget what their character names are even.
Yeah.
But anyway, they find the worms from his home planet. It's like, so you're telling me that this alien race actually exists somewhere in the universe? How'd they manage to get that lucky to...
Maybe it's like an L. Ron Hubbard type thing, where he like put his like Scientology knowledge into his into his stories.
Yeah. Maybe. I read that Alan Rickman, he hates science fiction, but he thought the script was funny enough, so he decided he would look past that. But I enjoy that his character is always wearing that prosthetic head.
That was like, something I didn't understand. Like, why wouldn't he have ever taken it off? Because he's even wearing it when he's at his own home.
Yeah. Like, I think it's a fun character choice that you have this actor that hates this character so much, but just never takes off the full uniform.
Yeah.
You know, like...
I will say the cast of this movie, like, on paper... I don't know how it was perceived back then, but on paper now, it's a pretty star-studded
It's formidable.
Cast. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got a couple more alternate castings, too. Jason Nesmith, what could have been played by Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin, or Kevin Klein, had all three of those guys not declined the role.
Alec Baldwin would have been interesting.
Yeah. Kevin Klein, I think, might have been interesting, too. Because he would have had the pompous actor part down easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for Justin Long's character, Brandon, this was Justin Long's debut, but they were looking at Kieran Culkin, Eddie K. Thomas, a.k.a. Finch from American Pie, or Tom Everett Scott, who I know him from, like, American Werewolf in London or something like that.
I'm shocked that Seth Green isn't in that.
Oh, yeah. yeah, that's possible, yeah. Maybe he was too well established. I mean, none of these other guys were really well established at that time.
Yeah. Because this was like right post Home Improvement Tim Allen as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, for Eddie K. Thomas, he did American Pie the same year.
Mm-hmm.
So like maybe he chose American Pie over this one.
Yeah.
Bigger role. I know. I like me some Justin Long, though. I always like Justin Long. I mean, one of my all-time favorite comedies is Accepted.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
My only thing with him in this movie is nowadays Justin Long has such a deep voice.
Yeah.
And I think that must be by choice because there's no way like his voice, like he didn't go through puberty after this movie, I don't think. But it's like, yeah, in this movie, his voice is very high. So it's just, I wasn't used to seeing him with such a high-pitched voice.
Yeah.
I did like as well how when they I like I just Justin Long plays a very good nerd, and I've definitely seen. I think I talked about this when we talked about. Oh no, I didn't talk about this with you. I talked about this on Farm to Fable about the Superman panel that I saw. But it's like whenever you go to these cons and they have the panels and you have the question period, it's like you always kind of hope that everybody would be normal and just ask like normal questions, I guess. But there's always the people who come up and they ask like these really specific questions about character choices that were made in a specific episode and why did you do that and not this, and then what about this thing that happened in this other episode before, and why if it happened then why didn't it happen now? And it's all you're always just like sitting back being like, it's a TV show, guy. Like, yeah. it's fake.
Well, yeah, I mean, I listen to enough, like, television rewatch podcasts. I listen to The Office Ladies and Parks and Recollection. And one thing that I notice happens quite often is you get people saying, I don't remember this episode at all.
No. Right?
Like, the Office Ladies know their shit. But, like, you know, Real Doctors or Fake Doctors, Real Friends, which is the Scrubs one, or the Always Sunny in Philadelphia podcast, you know, they'll rewatch it and they'll be like, yeah, I don't remember filming that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going in here asking, oh, well, in this specific scene, what was your motivation? He's like, what episode was that? What season was that? Was I the one that did that? Yeah, I know the reality of what some of those actors are thinking because I've done my research. I've listened to my research.
Yeah. It always like the other thing with conventions, I always feel bad when they're doing the signings. I mean, they make pretty good money doing signings, but it's just one of those things like it's so one-sided.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I got an autograph from Kevin Conroy, who's the voice of Batman in Batman, the animated series.
Yeah, he is.
Or even Jason Mewes. Jason Mewes is the best example. Because it was, like, I love those movies. Like, I love Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know so, and I've listened to Jay and Silent Bob Get Old. So it's like, I know everything about Jason Mewes. And I'm going to Jason Mewes with all that. He doesn't know anything about me, so it's like you can't expect to have like a real conversation. So it's always so anticlimactic because it's always like, oh yeah, how's the show, how are you enjoying it? And it's just like, and then they sign it and you're off, and then the next person comes. Is I always find it really weird because you're kind of hoping that like maybe you'll, and you can see it in Galaxy Quest as well, like you're kind of hoping that maybe you'll get to have a moment with these people that you look up to or that, and that, you know, brought you joy in life. And it's always it could never really fully be what you hope it will be.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, they definitely go to the extreme here when, like, Jason is depressed after overhearing them, and, like, he's not even looking at people anymore, just signing the photo and pushing it across. Yeah. My most meaningful exchange, I will say this, just on the subject of Jason Mewes, I did go see An Evening with Kevin Smith one time when he was in town, and I stood in line to ask him a question. So, I mean, you don't want your meaning, or you wanted your meaningful exchange with someone like Jason Mewes. At least when I ask Kevin Smith a question, he goes on this fucking 10-minute tangent that's, you know, answering my question, and it's like, there, okay, that was a meaningful conversation with Kevin Smith.
I mean... To be fair, they're not all bad. Like, when I went to the Vancouver Fan Expo a couple weeks back, Will Friedle was there. He's the older brother in Boy Meets World. And he
Boy
was,
Meets
like,
World, yeah.
The voice of Batman Beyond and Ron Stoppable Kim Possible. Yeah. And 4 years ago, or maybe seven years ago, actually, my buddy and I got a picture of him at the Calgary Expo. So we printed off a picture of that picture. And we went and got him to sign it. And there was nobody at his booth. So he actually, like, we got to actually talk to him and, like, ask him some questions. And he thought it was super funny that we brought this picture and stuff. So that was cool. I wish more moments could be like that.
Yeah.
But anyways, back to the movie.
I just have to find the right good year to go to one of these things.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, this year probably, I bet it's probably going to be a couple years for the world to get back to normal and for it to actually... be what it was, but
yeah instead of them sitting in booths. I've seen footage of that the, you know, the live expos now, they're sitting in booths with like a little teller window.
Where were we?
So
went off on a little tangent there.
A little bit. I mean, let's get into the actual, like, adventure story. I mean, you know, actually, no, you know what? No.
Wait, I have let's... one more. I want one funny thing to bring us back into it. I love the scene after Jason, like, he's all depressed and he goes back to his home and he's, like, drinking, he gets drunk. And then the next day, the Thermians are there to pick him up. And he, like, doesn't have his pants on, and they all walk in, and they're kind of looking, he's got his, like, ass facing them. And yeah. Then he's like, I love when he's like, can you help me find my shoe? It looks like this. And they all look up to, in the ceiling. It's just classic comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, after he gets beamed up the first time, I'm wondering about the life that Jason Nesmith has. Because it's like... he's doing stuff where he's going over to fans' houses to put on, like, one-man shows.
Yeah, that seems incredibly dangerous, especially when it comes to fandom. Because it's just, those are the types of people that you're gonna end up in a hole.
Yeah.
Like, it puts the lotion on the skin type situation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when they actually take him to the ship, like, we've got the whole bit in the limo where he passes out and they beam him onto the ship, and he thinks he's on a set.
Yeah.
But, you know, and at this point, like, he's like looking around and he's like, wow, you guys busted out all the stops and all that. And then it's just like, yeah, but you're going to put in a half-assed effort even though you're hungover? Like, now you're just being a dick. It's bad enough that you were being a dick to your castmates, but now you're just being a dick to these guys, too.
Yeah, to
his
fans.
They pay for a good show.
And that's kind of, like, the thing that, you know, like, Gwen says to him, right, is, like, you know, he's always been kind of an asshole to his castmates, but he's always been really good to the fans. And I wonder how much that is true for, like, a lot of these guys in real life, where it's, like, if you're at that stage, it's, like, you depend on the fans to keep coming to see you. Like, again, William Shatner was at Vancouver Fan Expo, and there was, like, hundreds of people lining up to get a picture with him. And in COVID times, that means, like, it's a picture socially distanced, so it's not even like before where you could, like, put your arm around him or something. It's literally, like, he's sitting on a chair, there's a plastic window, and then you're, like, over there. So the pictures all look ridiculous, because it's just, like... it just looks like William Shatner sitting on a chair with people 6 feet away. It's weird, but...
yeah, it's exactly the same as me having a selfie with the pandas at the Calgary Zoo.
Yeah.
It's through a pane of glass. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he goes through this, like, half-assed thing, and we get to meet our bad guy. I forget his name. Shit, what was his name?
Saurus.
Saurus, right. I do like the moment there where he's like, okay, throw everything at them. I want to go home. And he finds out that it is, in fact, real. So he meets up with his castmates again at an opening. This is, I'm trying here. This is a long way for me to get to at an opening for Tech Value Electronics Superstore.
Sorry, I just kept cutting you off. But not...
and that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. No, see, here's the problem with Galaxy Quest. There are very few sponsors. So I'm like, what can I talk about to get me into one of the sponsors? That's why when you started talking about when the Thermians came to pick him up, I thought you were going to try to push me in by saying he wanted a Coke in the back of the limo.
Oh, no. Yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah, I'm just going to close my eyes. Don't worry, guys. I'm listening to you. But always on the lookout for product placements and movies this week, Galaxy Quest is brought to you by Coca-Cola, Lincoln, IBM, and the possibly fictional Tech Value Electronics Superstore. I can't quite get an accurate read on that with Google, whether this was an actual thing. It's a generic name. But that's it. That's all I got. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Going back to the limo, I totally thought that they were going to pull a Last Starfighter and have the limo turn into a spaceship or something.
Yeah, yeah.
and just fly him away.
So in the sponsors there, I listed IBM. It's funny because the IBM computer is Justin Long's. And Justin Long is famously the Mac guy from the Mac commercials. And I found that hilarious, is that, no, he's a PC in this movie.
Yeah, pre-conversion.
It's like when the Can You Hear Me guy switched over to a different company. Like, he went from Sprint to, like, something else, I think. I don't know. It's an American thing.
Yeah,
I don't know the details. Yeah. So, I like that love in this movie. It sees no species. You know, it's just everyone is free to love these squid creatures. When they show themselves as squid creatures at that one point, do they remind you of the yip, 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 guys from Sesame Street?
Not well versed in my Sesame Street to remember those guys.
Oh, okay. They look kind of like Zoidberg, but not quite. I don't know. They've got dangly things, but that's all they say is yip, 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 yip. No, that's...
I'm going to do a quick Google. Yip, yip, Sesame Street. There we go. Oh, yeah. I can see where you're coming from. Especially, like... Yeah, when you kind of see them full body and they have all these dangly things, yeah, they do kind of look like that. I feel like the Galaxy Quest ones kind of, they have a little bit more tentacles on the face, if I recall.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally see what you're going for.
I like that, you know, once the crew actually gets onto the ship and becomes part of the adventure, I like that they've made it actually plausible that these people could do their jobs on the ship.
I thought that was ingenious, that the fact that the Thermians have, like, designed the controls based on what they observed in the show so that, you know, like, you could operate it if you just, by muscle memory.
Yeah, Tommy just has to learn how to fly again. Oh, that is still one of my favorite scenes, is them pulling out of the spaceport.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, just so scraping. I don't quite understand with Gwen, where she's like, all I ever did was repeat the computer. And I like the moments where it's like, see, I'm just doing it naturally now. But is she the only one that can talk to the computer as well? Because even when Jason asks a question of the computer, she still has to ask the question as well before the computer answers.
Yeah, it would have been nice. I don't know if they do this, but you know how, like, my limited knowledge of Star Trek, but it's like everybody kind of has their, like, their role. Like, I know, like, in the original series, it's like, you know, McCoy is, like, the doctor. Spock is kind of, like, the scientist or whatever.
Yeah.
And other ones I've seen where people are like the computer people or whatever, like analysts and all that. Like, it would have been nice to kind of know, like, all their specific roles. Like, clearly we know that, that Tommy is, he must be the pilot, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But what is everybody else's kind of designation, if, as it were?
Yeah. Like, I feel like, you know, Alan Rickman is basically Spock in this situation. He's the science guy. Yeah, because I don't think any of them were actually doctors.
No.
Which is probably safe for this particular show. You know, that, like, at least none of them were pretending to be doctors, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah, that would have been... Because, I mean, if it was somebody, it would have been Fred.
Yeah.
Because Guy is the red shirt. Like, he's the one who's waiting to die.
Yeah. But Fred is the engineer, though. He's Scotty.
He's Scotty, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think the joke with Gwen is the fact that, you know, she's just the token boobs.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, Gwen DeMarco is so much more than that as a person, but on the show, yeah, she was just the token boobs. And I think that's all the joke is, like, even Uhura, at least on the original Star Trek, did a bit more because she was the communications officer. But yeah, it seems like Gwen's job is I have to ask the computer questions.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, you probably. I think that sounds reasonable.
Yeah. So I thought for a 1999 movie, the effects were pretty good. Like all those little troll creatures, like the little blue guys.
Well, yeah, where it's the like the cannibal babies.
Yeah. Aw, that one's injured. But like the rock monster too was like not too bad. Like, you know.
Yeah, I thought the trolls were good, and I thought the aliens, like the squid aliens, when you saw them, were good. I don't know if those were computer generated or animatronic.
Do you think any of Ceres was enhanced by computers?
Because
I feel like it was a mask.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that was a mask. It reminded me very. It was very Power Rangers monster looking.
Okay.
To my eyes.
Okay.
So I think it was just a like a suit, not computer generated. The only one I was gonna say where I was kind of like eh was the rock monster.
Okay, yeah.
That was the only one where I was like, you know, you could remaster that a little bit if you wanted to. But
I do like the plan to beam it into the airlock, you know, to get rid of all the bad guys. Oh, you know, I just remembered, like, yeah, remember earlier when you asked about, like, why just these historical documents? There is the line where he says, no, it's pretend, just like Gilligan's Island.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, oh, those poor people.
Oh,
so
yeah,
they've seen Gilligan's Island too. Yeah.
Hmm. We haven't really touched on Guy all that much, but I really enjoyed Sam Rockwell and that character, even just how he kind of the way he starts out and he's kind of there, like he's there as the guy introducing them, and you kind of just imagine like. He conned his way into that role, like, even to be there just by being like, oh, well, I was on an episode of this show.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love that when he's at the autograph signing and he's like, oh, I brought some 8x10s. Like, could I, like, you know, I was on the show. You guys probably don't remember me. Do you mind if I just sit down? And, like as if any, if they don't remember you, nobody else is going to remember you. So what makes you think, like, anybody's going to want your autograph?
Yeah.
But then even once the adventure starts, he's very keenly aware of, like, how the show works. Whereas, and like, the fact that he's not the main, like, he's not one of the main, like, guys. So, like,
he's, you know, expendable.
He's the expendable one. And when he gets mad at Fred about just opening the door without even knowing if there's oxygen on the planet. And then when Gwen's...
Fred just sniffs. That seems okay. Yeah.
And he's the one who stops Gwen from going to, like, pet the cute little monsters.
Yeah, he's the voice of reason. Yeah, he's not a series regular. He needs to protect himself. Yeah, no, he's definitely a fun character. And I like, even like the fact that he's really excited when he's there. And they're like, what? And he's like, I'm just excited to be on the show.
Yeah.
But, you know, you know, going back to, like, what I was saying about I listened to TV show rewatch podcasts, where it's just like that you hear about a lot of people that say that, oh yeah, I was in this one episode of The Office and people recognize me all the time. So there probably are a couple of diehard fans out there that might recognize him if he sat down.
Yeah,
like it might be as long as Will Friedle's line, but
yeah. I guess it's just, it always makes me sad, like, you don't really see it a lot, like, I mean, every now and then, you see it at comic conventions, where you just, like, there's always a guy sitting at his booth, with a massive banner with his name on it, and you can just tell, like, nobody knows who he is, like, for whatever reason, nobody's seen the show that you're on, or, like...
I wonder how many times a day that guy sees people, like, pull out their phones immediately and start typing.
Yeah.
Start Googling, should I know this guy? Who the fuck is he?
Seriously. I can't remember what his name is. He lives in Calgary, so he's always at these cons. I think he was on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I can't remember what his name is. He's like an Asian guy. Ah, got it. Garrett Wang.
Oh, okay.
He was Ensign Harry Kim in whatever Star Trek.
But
he's always the name Harry Kim. Yeah, always there, no matter what. Because I think I'm pretty sure he lives in Alberta. But I've literally seen people stop in front of his booth to Google who he is and see like, do I know him from something?
Is it worth $20?
Yeah. or you get these old professional wrestlers that were like B wrestlers in the 1980s who nobody remembers, and they're there as a special appearance.
I was in Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah, it's just sad.
I did remember that when they do beam the rock monster into the airlock and they suck them out into space, Fred does have that one line where he's like, oh, did you see the door sticking? I'll get someone down here to fix with a can of WD-40 to fix that. Fuck, I loved Fred. I really loved Fred.
Apparently, there's an interview with Enrico Colantoni, and he was saying it took Tony Shalhoub a long time to figure out that character, like how to make it pop, I guess, for lack of a better word. Because, I mean, yeah, on the outset, like, he's kind of just the background guy. Like, it's really about the actor's choices with that character, especially, that make it super funny. Just the delivery and that, like, deadpan and just the kind of, like, yeah, he just seems like he's permafried, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's the bit where, like, they go through the minefield or whatever, and he calls up to the bridge, and he's just like, yeah, so they're saying that we got a crack in the beryllium sphere, but there's a nearby planet that has more that we can get. And they're like, okay, we'll do that. And he's like, we did it again, guys. And he high fives everyone. Like, yeah. Yeah, he was a great character. And I mean, that's the thing, is like, as an ensemble, like it's a great group. And I do love how they poked the fun at the fact that, at two things. One, at like the Star Trek or Star Space fiction genre. But I also like the fact that they play with the historical documents. The ship is built to the specifications. Like when they have to like press the button to deactivate the bomb that's about to go off, or the self-destruct, it still keeps counting down until it gets to one, because that's what they've seen on the show.
Yeah.
You know, I do love moments like that, or, you know, like the chompers, where Gwen clearly says, oh, fuck that, if you read her lips.
Yeah.
But they've dubbed it to be forget that, so they could get a lower rating. This is one of those things that I always think of when I see a Star Wars movie, or, you know, any of these things where it's just not practical. Like, why do they have these things? What is the function of these things? You know, why does Star Wars always have big open pits with no railings? You know, it's...
Yeah.
So, like, I just love that they have to, like, to get to this center where this Omega 13 is and the self-destruct button, they have to go across, like, this narrow bridge over a fan, and just, like, all these tropes that they are aware of while it's happening. Like, that's the best part. Is if it was the show itself, it would be, like, just another day at the office going over the giant fan. Mm-hmm. But because, like, it's ridiculous, they're pointing it out. And I like that, like, we're in on the joke is what makes it the comedy brilliant. I think that's the point I'm getting at. That's what makes the comedy brilliant, I think.
I'm unclear on exactly, like, what the Omega 13, like, how it was created, because that's not something the Thermians created. It already exists in this world, because they wouldn't have known what it was to create it. So, like, where does it come from?
That's the same question I was asking about the worms that Alan Rickman ate.
Yeah. You know,
the beryllium sphere. How is the beryllium sphere actually something that works as jet propulsion? This was all made up by some writer's room.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big hole in this movie is somehow everything is possible. Like, I can't believe that the creators of this television show were that scientifically accurate. So yes, to have this magic thing that somehow takes them back 13 seconds in time, where's the science? Let me see the Good Will Hunting chalkboard of figuring out all these physics equations to actually make this Omega 13 a thing.
Yeah, it's almost like at some point it might have been funny to include like a phone call from Jason to like the writer of the show to be like, "Hey, we're on this mission in real life now. Like, what do you what was the Omega? Like, maybe because it got canceled prematurely." Like, that would have been a cool extra addition to be like, oh, we need to find the writer of the show to figure out what the Omega 13 actually was.
Yeah, but, you know, if you do something like that, then you kind of eliminate Justin Long's character. You don't need Brandon anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and that would be the downside of that, is because it is always, you know, for him, it's speculation. These are the fan theories online, you know? That's the nerd culture.
Or you could have had, because Brandon is such a nerd, he would have found the unproduced, like, final episode.
Yeah, there.
and known what it was or whatever.
Yeah. And see, I love, though, that he's not an expert on his own, so he has to bring in his coven of nerds, his little nerd brain trust, because only some of them know certain parts of the engineering plans and stuff like that. Like, I love the little conference call he gets going on.
Yeah, and the fact that his mom is still making him take out the garbage and all that.
So funny. Mom, this couldn't be a worse time!
Yeah. At the end, I almost kind of wanted them to just... Part of me wanted them to just continue on as the real-life crew.
Yeah.
And just continue on with their adventures.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, at least they got a reboot of the TV show.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
But, you know, Colin, I think we could do our own version of the TV show. You're saying you want to see more TV show. Well, okay, this is reenacting one of their scenes from the TV show in a way. I think we need to do a little "I Used to Like This One Piece" theater. So in that very confusing intro I had to get me into "I Used to Like This One Piece" theater, I'm talking about when they are bluffing and Jason and Alexander Dane have to pretend to fight to create a diversion. So I've chosen the scene. It was hard to find a scene that I knew I wanted to do a scene, but it's hard to find one that didn't have multiple characters in it, because this is such an ensemble movie.
Yeah.
So this is between Alexander and Jason Nesmith. Now, up at the top, I introduced you as the Alexander Dane. Do you want to carry on your tradition of being Alan Rickman in our "I Used to Like This One Piece" theaters?
Sure, I would love nothing more.
Okay. I mean, if you want Jason, you can have Jason. I'm just...
No, I'll be Dane.
Okay.
Maybe my raspy voice will suit well for this.
Yeah.
All right, are you ready?
You betcha.
Where's the happy ending, Jason? Never give up, never surrender.
Maybe it's about time you just backed off, you fin-headed monstrosity.
You what?
You're starting to act just like you did in episode 17, you scene-stealing hack.
Oh, right. Well, how does it feel, Jason? Was it worth it? You've murdered us all.
Shut up.
Hundreds to die just because of you?
I told you to shut up!
Hundreds to die just because you want to play at being commander, you raving lunatic?
Then I'll see you in hell, won't I? Yes! I used to like this One Piece theater. Because that's the point, they break into a fight. That right there shows you the kind of commitment that these actors have to actually knowing everything about their show, is that he can summon up episode 17 just like that and realize where we're going with this.
Well, I think actually that scene kind of points it out, but I think it's interesting. Like, Jason, I get the feeling that Jason got his big break and knew he was never going to, and just loved it so much never wanted to do anything else.
Yeah.
Like, he seems almost as big of a nerd about the show as, like, the fans. And maybe that speaks to why, like, he's known for treating them so well.
That is true, because before he goes into sulky mode signing, he is engaging with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we end up with some very sad moments in this movie, Colin. Did you get sad when Mathisar died?
When he like is getting tortured.
The other guy, yeah.
I didn't really get sad because for whatever reason I was distracted by the fact that we never get to see Rainn Wilson's character after the limo. He's never really around again.
I think he's in a couple of scenes, but yeah, you're right. He's not in a whole lot.
And so I didn't really pick up on the relationship between this guy who dies and Alexander Dane too much. But I did like to see, you know, I like how afterwards Alan Rickman kind of just like goes psycho and beats the shit out of all those alien henchmen who were like,
yeah.
Who like clearly they broke the budget on Saris's costume because all the other aliens just seem like they're in ski masks and like military helmets.
Yeah. Yeah. He's energized by his catchphrase, by Grabthar's hammer.
You will be avenged. What other sad moments were there? We had that one. I don't remember. Probably the saddest moment is when Mathisar is getting tortured and Saris forces Jason to like explain to him that, you know, the historical documents are just a fake TV show. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I thought that was expert acting by Enrico Caltoni.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's got that weird silent cry of the. He was great.
I like how they work in the time, like they have Saris come back. They don't really explain how he's able to take the form of Fred, but he goes there and kills everyone, and then they just have to fit in like using the Omega 13. So.
Yeah.
You have the little time reversal. And then just the perfect clean ending after the ship crashes back into the con. Like, everything has come full circle. They're all back. They're all united. And then just to make sure that there's no questions about this weird monster beast alien that's come through with them. And it's totally feasible that this spaceship was just some weird promotional tool. You know, Jason shoots him with this gun that makes him completely disintegrate.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Nice and tidy.
Exactly. Yeah, until everyone gets out to the parking lot and they're like, my car!
Yeah.
Fuck, because it took out like half the cars in the parking lot before crashing into the building.
Also, there's no way that somebody's maimed, killed, and injured in that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. But I like how the announcer, Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall, I like how he's just goes with it, you know, and it's like, and we've got this guy, or, you know, crewman guy, and this girl, you know, like,
yeah.
Just rolls with it. Yeah. But, you know, was the dive roll necessary, Jason? Come on. I even like the comment, like, when he's fighting the rock monster of, like, somehow you managed to get your shirt off. Hey, Jason.
Yeah. I think the dive roll and the shirt thing were the, like the direct homages to
Captain Kirk.
To Captain Kirk, yeah.
Yeah.
There was one interesting thing watching the special features. Like, the script clearly went through some rewrites, and they have like this script writer, but they also have the guy who wrote the original script that was sold that kind of, you know, then became Galaxy Quest. I think it was called like Captain Sunshine or something like that. But in the interview with the writer, apparently, instead of Saris, the original idea was that the Alan Rickman, like, Alexander Dane character was going to be the antagonist.
Really?
The idea was that he would have gone to space first and basically, like, become this, like, space warlord and then come back to Earth and then, like, attack the Thermians or whatever. And then they would have gone and got the rest of the crew to come and then they would have, like, faced off.
Wow.
And I was like, man, that would have actually been an interesting to see. I think it would have been more of its own thing and less of a
yeah.
less of like the Star Trek parody that it became, but it's kind of cool.
I don't know. I mean, it's almost like, well, you still could make that movie.
Yeah.
Apparently there was going to be a sequel. Like they wanted to do one several years ago, but Alan Rickman died. And so they decided, no, we're not going to do one. I have noticed that with these movies that we do on this show, I am glad that I've gotten into the habit of watching the movie till the end, because there is a little post-credit, like, something in this movie.
Is there?
It's, yeah.
It's
nothing major. I mean, think of at the end of Endgame, when all you hear is Tony banging the metal.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those, and it's at the very end, you hear Mathisar saying, "Never give up, never surrender." So that's all it is. Yeah. Mathisar saying, "Never give up, never surrender." So yeah, I'm like, there's things planted in at the end of credits more often than I ever thought.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I don't really think to even check for like any movie made before like 2010, really.
Yeah. Did you wait till the end of Batman? A little tangent here.
I didn't, because I had to piss so bad. I could not hang on any longer, but I looked it up later and saw kind of what happened.
And it was, I'm just like, seriously, bullshit. Like, those were the longest credits I've ever sat through, but I've been holding my pee. Like, I was in dance mode, and it's like, and that's what I get? Fuck.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I thought I was literally going to burst.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That is Galaxy Quest. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 7.3 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 70. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 90% on the tomato meter. Critics loving that one. And an audience rating of 79%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a rock monster hurling you into the side of a cliff, hit us with some reviews.
Man, I don't think there's a bad review for this movie.
Wow. Okay.
I've been trying to see if I could find one. I wonder if there's a way to sort stars.
Yeah, just because, like, those, like, 70%, that would beg to differ that they're, like, I mean, I guess maybe there's a lot of, it's okay.
I got one two-star from Zach M., who says, "I had high hopes for this movie, but it was a great disappointment for me. Be it known that I am not a Trek fan, but I don't know if that would have helped. I just didn't like the pacing, the characters, and the overall plot was just bleh. I don't know how else to describe it. Just not a fun or funny movie for me. A few laughs here and there, but I didn't like it. Couldn't finish." Couldn't finish.
Couldn't finish.
That sounds... That's not the way I would have... I don't know.
Yeah.
Rich Gumbinger, Gumbinger, gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "I have watched this movie easily a dozen times. It is without a doubt the best comment on dedicated sci-fi fandom." I think she meant to say the best commentary on dedicated sci-fi fandom.
Yeah, I'd guess that.
"The Star Trek universe and the unnatural nostalgic affections we have for our favorite dated television series. It explores the reality of the character's current situation, never losing sight and poking good-natured fun at of each of their foibles, regain commitment and dedication to each other and their fans. A truly enjoyable script and a visual display of the genre. The scoring, the visuals, and the atmosphere are immersive."
Nice.
On Google Play, Zerep Road says 5 out of 5 stars. "I had passed over this movie several times when I had it available under flat fee streaming, but decided to finally view the movie, now paying a la carte. I'm glad I finally did. I had really missed a movie that brought me back to my childhood feel-good aftermath from watching a fun movie. It helps to watch if you're up to date and aware of some of the sci-fi movies and shows that have come through the past couple decades, but I'd still recommend it for a lighthearted, lazy afternoon entertainment."
Okay.
Robert R. gives the movie 3.5 out of 5 stars and says, "Though known for deftly blending the love letter and pastiche tones together into something truly unique and satisfying, Dean Parasot's Galaxy Quest honestly shocked me most in the screenwriting department. This movie puts on a clinic in how to structure a cinematic narrative in nearly every paradigm you can think of. The hero's journey, the sequence method, Blake Snyder, etc. Every beat, scene, and arc is just so tightly and aerodynamically arranged that you truly feel as though no time is wasted. You also really get a well-developed sense of the filmmaker's feelings on the subjectivity of one's reality versus another's. The complicated relationships that performers can have with their roles, and more. Way more than just a parodical look at the tropes within one's sci-fi most... Way more than just a parodical look at the tropes within one of sci-fi's most beloved IPs. I wonder if he's been to film school a time or two.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I had ever heard the word pastiche before we started doing this show, and now I've heard it, like, multiple times.
Yeah. Last one from Malk C, 5 out of 5 stars. Many people love this film. I do. It's an my all-time top 5, but it's not too easy to explain why. It might superficially look like just another silly comedic romp, but it's much more than that. Alan Rickman, who passed away so young in 2016, is the center of what makes this film so glorious. His churlish descent from Shakespeare to starring in a cheesy but successful TV series is superseded by a chance opportunity to become a genuine hero. The same applies to all the, quote, TV actors in the film. Behind the comedy, human love is at the core of this story, and you can feel it radiating from every scene.
Right on. So we've got 7.3 and 79 from audiences, and 70 and 90 from critics. Over the last part of this podcast, I have said glowing things about this movie. I don't think it's going to be any surprise for me to just come right out and say, this is easily a 90% movie for me. I love this movie. I was drawn to different characters this time. Like, you had the one review there where they said that, you know, Alan Rickman is the heart of this movie. And maybe on the past viewings, I would have thought that. But I found other characters to be the heart, like Fred. I don't know. I just, there's something about Fred that just, you know, held the team together in a way that I never appreciated before. Alan, like, I don't know. There's heart coming from everyone, not just Alan Rickman, is all I'm saying. I don't know. I love this movie. It was still an enjoyable watch to me. It made me laugh. Great performances from pretty much everyone in the movie. Like, I don't really have a bad thing to say about this movie.
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who's watching it for the first time, kind of the first thing I would say about it is that I've been very prone to judging Tim Allen, but I think this is his finest performance.
Okay.
Like, I think that he does such a great job as that character in this movie, and I'm honestly shocked that there's not a Galaxy Quest trilogy.
Yeah.
I guess, like, coming out in 99, I can see why, but I think if this movie was made now, the might of nerddom would have carried this as a franchise easy. Like, yeah. You know, it's just ripe. There's so many more things that they could do going forward.
Even like you said earlier, I mean, it's too bad that they didn't stay in space. You know, they made Mathsar the commander and everything like that. Like, the bit at the end where they are flying through the minefield and can you get closer to the mines? And it's like, well, we're dragging mines, right? You know, yeah. Like that whole bit, it's like, oh, you know, he figured out how to be a captain. It would have been nice to see him be like, let's go to space for a couple years. And there you go. There's your trilogy.
Yeah. And I think Alan Rickman, it's awesome. Like, he's just the best.
He is.
And it's just so I love seeing him in these comedic performances.
He did Dogma the same year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't think, but I still remember being blown away watching Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves with how funny he is.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching this movie. I'm just so used to seeing him as Snape that when I see him in these other roles, it's so refreshing and just so indicative of his talent.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I think overall the entire movie, like you said, like as an ensemble, I think every actor hits it out of the park. Like they all do exactly what they need to do to make the movie funny. I don't think there's like a bummer performance anywhere that I can think of. I think the story is fun and it's just a simple, heartwarming. Like I also just loved like the full circle journey that the characters go on. Like I like how much they change from the beginning to the end. It's really great. And even like the parody of Star Trek, the little that I know about Star Trek is just, it's enough to still be to you can still kind of you still kind of like get it. And it just, like I said, it's not a straight up parody, but those little moments add a lot of flavor to the movie, I guess is the best way I can describe it. So
Well, it's even like I said at the top, where it feels like it's done with love as a love letter to Star Trek. And because of the joy that it brings you, you can tell that the love is there. Like, and I think that's part of what helps bring the joy is, it's like,
yeah.
no, it's not making fun of it, it's embracing it. Because as a nerd in nerd culture, we're finally getting embraced.
I think too, the fact that I took the time to watch all the special features really colored my view on this. But I think the movie I also find really I have a lot of warm feelings towards it, just because listening to all the interviews, you can tell that all the actors really loved working on this movie, and they all really love each other. Like they all just like loved working together. And one of the special features on the DVD I watched had like I can't remember what the guy who plays Tommy, the black guy, him and Sam Rockwell do like a rap with Sigourney Weaver, and it's just so funny and so fun to see. And it just looks like they had an absolute blast working on this movie, and I love for and it really that also like just really I think it really comes through in the movie itself.
Right on. Well, there we go. That is Galaxy Quest, and that's our show for this week. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, just tell people, tell your friends, share our posts, tell people to come and listen to us, help us build an audience, or go onto whatever podcasting platform you use and give us 5 stars, or, just help get us noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond and be a producer of the show and get a shout out on the show, just like our executive producer, Joshua Blum, just go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon family.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, for all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. And if you want to drop us a line, you can do so by emailing us at IUsedToLikeThisOne, all one word, @gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Yeah.